just so you know, there's a lot of fun going over here at the table today, and I would encourage you all to come over and participate. Whoa. So what are you doing? What are you coloring?
I'm coloring a rainbow monster.
A rainbow what?
A rainbow monster.
A rainbow monster. What are you coloring? Oh, you've done a few already. Do your monsters have names?
I don't know.
Does your monster have a name?
Not yet.
What do you think you would name your monster?
Layla.
Layla. That's beautiful.
My monster's name is Rainbow.
Rainbow? Nice.
I don't know.
Oh, come on, Ellie. And what about you, Sarah?
I'm thinking about Sparky.
You're thinking about Sparky. Oh, nice.
I colored three monsters already.
You colored three monsters already?
This is my third one.
Your third one? You better get over here if you want to have a coloring page, people. That's all I'm going to say. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of a spooky story. Can I do that?
Yay.
Because you don't come home with me. You go home with your parents. So I can do that.
Can I just ask you one more question?
You can ask me anything you want. Can you do it loud enough? Go ahead.
I kind of colored two.
Oh, nice. You did your own on the back.
Uh-huh.
Very nice. Very creative. Next time I'm going to have you plan the color sheets. How's that, Nick? Okay. He'll never volunteer again. So when I was a kid, oh, I love you, Nancy. And I'm sure you all remember this from when you were really little. Were you afraid of monsters? Were you? Did you used to be afraid of monsters? Where did they hide?
In my heat vent.
In your heat vent? Oh, that's original. Yeah. Were you ever afraid of monsters when you were a little
kid? I was afraid of monsters.
When you were a little kid?
They were in my closet.
They were in your closet. Okay. What about yours? Did you ever have any monsters?
No.
You were lucky.
I have one.
Oh, Nick has another one. Go ahead.
I have one under my bed.
Yes. Nicholas, I had two under my bed. Did you know that? When I was a little kid last year, as Nancy said, I was terrified of monsters under my bed. And my bed, let's pretend this is my bed, okay? And let's pretend where Phil is, raise your hand, Phil, is the stairs, is the door to my bedroom, okay? When I was a little kid, you know what I used to do? I would take a leap from there to try to make it into my bed, because I was afraid that the monsters were going to nibble at my toes. It's scary, right? Yeah. But we don't believe in those anymore, right? So you don't have to worry. It's okay. You go sleep with your parents if you get upset tonight, okay? You'll feel so much better. Oh, nice, Phil. Very nice. You can go home with Phil, too. So do you know how I stopped being afraid of the monsters under my bed? Do you know how I stopped being afraid?
No.
I introduced myself to them, and I gave them names. Do you want to know what my friends, my monsters' names were? Can you guess? Not Mike, no.
Fred.
Fred, you're right. You're so smart. Do you know what the other one's name was? Ethel. Fred and Ethel were the two monsters under my bed. And once I got to know them, I was not afraid of them anymore. Isn't that cool? Isn't it cool that once we figured out who they are and we introduced ourselves to them, they were my buddies? That's pretty cool, right? What happened to them? Wow, Nicholas. Whew. I think I have to go home now. I don't know what happened to them. I think they probably moved into somebody else's bedroom.
Or maybe they can camouflage.
Maybe they can camouflage, and maybe they only come out when I need them. What do you think about that? Uh-huh. We're going to write another sermon together, you and I, at some point. Uh-huh. Did you all have monsters under your bed? Oh, come on. You know you did. You might as well admit it. What?
I didn't, but I was afraid of the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, but who wasn't? I mean, really, the Wicked Witch of the West. Did anybody have monsters? Yeah? Did it have a name? What was its name? George. Where did George... I drew a picture of a George this morning. Where did George live? Did you ever get to be friends? Okay. Anybody else? Yes? Yours were in your radiator, too. How many were there?
One or two.
One or two? Did they have names?
No.
Okay. Are they still with you?
No.
Okay. Glad to hear it. Anybody else? Yes. Oh, in the basement. Yes. Coming up the stairs in the dark was never fun, right? Did the monsters ever come out during the day? Only at night, right? Yeah. I slept with a nightlight until I went to college. And by college, I mean seminary. No, I'm just kidding. And some still have one. How many of you were afraid of the dark growing up? How many of you still are? Why? Because of the monsters, because you can't see where you're going? Yeah. So the first reading today came from author, and she's a professor and a former Episcopal priest. Well, she's still a priest, but she doesn't have a parish, Barbara Brown Taylor. And she has written numerous books, and one of my favorite is called Learning to Walk in the Dark. And she says that darkness is shorthand for anything that scares me, either because I'm not sure that I do not have the resources to survive it, or I do not want to find out. And as you heard in the reading, later she says, but I have learned things in the darkness that I could never have learned in the light, things that have saved my life over and over again. There's only one real conclusion then. I need darkness as much as I need light. I've been thinking about this because in today's reading, there's a lot, right? How many times have we heard the story of Nicodemus? And of course, what stands out for most of us is God so loved the world, John 3:16, that we see at every single football game held up, right? That God so loved the world that God sent Jesus not to judge, like the NFL is doing about its players who are kneeling, but that's a complete sidebar. But I wanted to focus on something else, because what we tend to focus on with this reading is Nicodemus sneaking around at night, right? And if you remember the last time I preached on this particular scripture reading, and I know you do, it is about Nicodemus sneaking around so that his colleagues won't know that he is trying to find out some stuff from Jesus. And he doesn't want his colleagues to know because he should know the stuff that you need to know as a Pharisee. So he doesn't want anybody to know that he's going to go talk to Jesus. And of course, as we go through this story, we realize that he leaves the same way he showed up, in the dark. Right? Pun intended. He's got nothing to show for it. He is slumping out. I can kind of see him going, oh man, that was just a waste of time and energy. And let's be clear, when you were walking around in the dark in first century Palestine, it was dark. No flashlights, no cell phones, no neat watches that light up, no streetlights, nothing. You were walking around in the dark. And that's where I kind of find a more profound message. I kind of see Nicodemus as more than just a Pharisee who doesn't grab on to believing in Jesus the way most of us would interpret that scripture. This time I saw him as somebody who was willing to risk walking around in the dark to get to Jesus, right? He was willing to risk ridicule should any of his friends find out. But even so, he was ready to confront those things that go bump in the night. Heck, he was even willing to be bump in the night because he couldn't see where he was going. But he so wanted to get something from Jesus, something that he was longing for, that he was willing to take that risk. And that's where I was in the beginning of the week. This is the beginning of the week when Donna needs the bulletin done by Monday, because first thing's Tuesday morning, it has to be finished because she's leaving town. And let me tell you, when she leaves town, So I had already finished my bulletin stuff early and I had gotten it to her. But by then, there was chatter all over the news about 1,500 children of migrants having been taken away from their parents, right? And they had been placed in surrogate homes, but once they're placed, the government is saying, now I'm no longer responsible for them, and therefore we don't know where they are. Have many of you heard this story? Really? It's been everywhere. 1,500 children. How are the children, by the way? It was overwhelming, and I got to be honest, I didn't really listen to much, and I didn't read much other than the headlines, but I did go ahead and fact check, because at least I wanted to know what I was talking about when I came to you to tell you about this, trying to figure out how to fit in with Nicodemus. It was overwhelming. By Friday, day off, I needed to get out of the house, because all during the week I was scanning the stuff about these kids and trying to figure out how to weave it in, and I needed to do something uplifting. So what did I do? I got on my bike early in the morning before it got too hot, when the air is clean and it's still just a little bit of humidity, and I started to go. And I got to about the 12th mile in when I realized, I wonder what's happened to all the homeless camps that used to be down in my neighborhood at the Greenway Trailhead that's right half a block from my home. Because you see, ironically, even though that particular part of the trailhead is right behind Springs Rescue Mission, those folks had been pushed away because we can see them in the neighborhood, and that's so annoying. And you can see them from the highway, and you can see them from the regentrification that's happening on Tejon and on Nevada, and I tell you what, who wants that after all? So this whole group had been pushed south. So I got on my bike and I thought, okay, let me head south and just to see what's going on. And I headed south and I came up just short of the sports complex over by Genitel on Circle Drive. You all know where it is. No, you don't. You're from this area and not there. I get it. And I came across a whole village of campers. And they were placed between, which I didn't even know was there, all of these depositories or dumps for concrete and blacktop that was torn up from roads, just shy of the detention center, which is also down on that area. And of course, they were right up on Fountain Creek, but not so close to the highway. Nobody could see them. There were woods on either side. In fact, I got to tell you, there was a sign that was posted on one of the trees that said, "Keep out private property." And behind that were a lot of tents and villages. The other thing that was really interesting was this young man had three tents set up, and he had a multitude of bicycle parts and bikes, and people were coming to see him to have their bicycles repaired along the trail. I didn't linger because it was my day off, and while I wanted to know where they were, and I wanted to make sure that there was at least a place for them to go, I didn't really want to be there on my day off. It's overwhelming. And so I got out of there as fast as I had arrived, sort of like Nicodemus getting out of there not too long after Jesus told him what he had to do. It's strange behavior, don't you think? Mine? To sort of seek out information, wondering what is going on, as it pertains to those dark things in our world. But then as soon as I was confronted by those dark things, I couldn't wait to get out of there. Saturday morning, there was a memorial service at First Congregational Church for a young man. I didn't know him, but I knew his family, David Dotson. David was one of five brothers who had passed away after a long history of trouble with mental illness and substance abuse. And his family was well known in this congregation, and I went because two of his brothers are UCC pastors, and I know them well, especially Jeffrey. And so I went in solidarity and in support of Jeff. And of course, as most memorial services go, there were times of reminiscing. Brilliantly, they also honored his difficulties, which was great. And they talked about him, both his challenges and his successes. And they talked about how soft he was with people, but how hard he was with himself. And there was an element of sadness and disappointment, obviously, tremendous grief, but also joy of having been touched by this human being. And I started to cry. And I'm thinking, why am I crying? I don't know this man. Certainly, there would be compassion and tenderness for his family, but why was I crying? And then I realized that I had introduced myself inadvertently to the monster under the bed. The monster that for me on that particular day and on that particular week, having avoided 1,500 lost children and a population of homeless that is continuously displaced, the monster of profound grief. There was that idea of thinking of my own children and their struggles and what they've gone through and what they couldn't go through. But just the enormity of loss that exists in the world in which I live, that I want to avoid, that is a monster, that is that place of darkness that I might visit, but I don't really want to stay there because it hurts too much. And yet here I found myself in the most unexpected places, talking to Jesus about what it means to be reborn, of not being so afraid of the darkness, but rather meeting him there in order to find comfort in a community that was also in that place of dark, dark grief. Barbara Brown Taylor says that spiritual darkness is fear of the unknown. It's that familiarity with divine absence and the mistrust of conventional wisdom. It's where we become suspicious of religious comforters, and we have a keen awareness of all of our limitations about God and about one another and about our abilities. She offers what sounds a little weird right now, three steps of how to learn to walk in the darkness. And the first one is stop trying to run the show or run from the show. She says, next you must sign the waiver that allows you to bump into some things that might frighten you at first. And finally, you must ask the darkness to teach you what it is you need to know. One night, when I was a child, I was so convinced that the monsters were going to bite my toes that I asked and begged and pleaded with my father one more time to look under the bed. All 6'4" of him got down, and he looked under the bed, and this time, he came up with Leo, my floppy-eared stuffed beagle that had been with me since 6 months old and I thought was gone because it had been missing since my mother changed the sheets, which of course was 10 years before. And he brings up Leo. And I've never experienced such joy at having him back. And guess what? I forgot about the monster. I've often wondered what happened to Nicodemus after he left. Do you? Like, what happened when he slumped away? Do you think that he continued to run from what Jesus offered him, this idea of, hey, you need to face the darkness. You need to look at those things that are keeping you from seeing what is really in front of you. Do you think that he learned to embrace the darkness, to take what was being offered? Or do you think he continued to stay in the shadow between light and darkness, never quite grasping or finding that which he was looking? Do you think that he had monsters that he believed were there to hurt him? It makes me sad to think that he walked away and never really got it, as happens to so many of us, and it almost happened to me last week. Again, don't get me wrong, it's happened before to me. It'll happen again, and it almost happened again last week. We do this all the time, right, without thinking about it? We don't think about what we might be giving up if we look under the bed. Instead, we're just afraid of what might be there, so we avoid it altogether. We avoid what the darkness is trying to teach us and what it is we're supposed to learn from it. Why does that scare us so much? I have a hard time remembering this, but just like Leo came out of the darkness, I remember that it's in those dark places that I will find God. That, like Barbara Brown Taylor says, it doesn't kill you. You come out of it. But rather, God is there waiting for me to surrender to that fear so that we can do it together, so that I can experience whatever it is I'm missing. To be born again, we have to face that darkness. We have to be willing to let it go and even die to whatever it is that's keeping us from finding the answers to those secrets that are causing us to lurk about. So, my friends, don't be afraid of monsters. Don't be afraid of the ones that are lurking under the bed, because you know as well as I do, they show up at 3 a.m. every morning and keep you up until 4:15 when the alarm is going to go off a half hour later. Don't be afraid of the monsters that are in the heat vent or the radiators or the closet. Name them. Look at them. Introduce yourself to them. Let them teach you what it is you need to know. Because in those darkest corners, I promise you, you will find your beloved. Let the people say.